Welcome to Inside Property with me, Richard Blanco. In this programme, we're discussing Brexit and its impact on landlords, property owners and investors. As data gradually filters through since the referendum on house prices and the economy, just how gloomy or positive should we be feeling? The past 12 months have seen significant changes in taxation and regulation, but will the recent change in government herald any U-turns? And is now a good time to buy? And if so, what strategies could investors adopt to navigate these choppy waters? Joining me in the studio to pick our way through this debate are Richard Bowser, editor of Property Investor News, Chris Norris, head of policy at the National Landlords Association, and Richard Donnell, research director at HomeTrack. Now, let me come to you first of all, Richard Donnell. There was lots of anecdotal evidence just after the referendum that the house prices were going to come down and offers were being lowered or withdrawn. But what is happening now that we've got a bit of data in? What's happening to house prices in London and the rest of the country?
Well, house prices are still rising, but they're starting to slow, particularly in southern England, large cities in the south. London's running at sort of 8% year on year. That's going to head down towards 4-5% by the year end. So we're certainly seeing a slowdown in house price growth. We've seen, particularly in the south of England, slowing transaction volumes, more supply coming on the market. But frankly, the further you are from London, the healthier the market looks.
And how are things looking from your perspective, Richard Bowser? You know, how are investors starting to adapt given the change in circumstances?
The changing circumstances in respect to Brexit or other issues such as the tax issues?
Well, both really.
I think without question, July, there was a real hiatus or a sort of suspension of belief as to, you know, to some extent and caused by clearly what was being fed through by the wider media, TV, etc. I think over the summer, clearly people have started to adjust. I think into September, you know, seeing it's knocked the froth off without question, and if you look at what's been happening at auctions recently, some auctioneers that we've seen recently, the last few weeks, the London auctions, the main London auctions have had a quiet room, and sales rates, the number of lots actually sold in the room, has been probably around the sort of 50-55% rate, whereas previously, going back to the heady days of prior to the April 1st stamp duty deadline, we were seeing sold rates in the 80s. So without question, that there has been an impact. And what I'm seeing with my magazine subscribers is long-term landlords are still very positive. But I think the impact on the newer entrant is probably fairly clear. People are being deterred.
Now, Chris Norris, coming to you, we've obviously seen this big change in policy from government, the shift towards first-time buyers and homeowners and to build-to-rent away from landlords. Do you see this changing at all now that we've got this new government led by Theresa May?
Well, it's an interesting time. I mean, it's certainly difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen as this government beds in and as we see what happens in later in the year with the autumn statement. I mean, what we certainly can say is that it will be a change in tone. We've seen a very political chancellor up until this point in George Osborne. Now Philip Hammond is, I suppose, best described as a more traditional Tory, and he's certainly not seen as a kind of co-power broker with Theresa May. So I don't think there's that difficulty that we had previously with George Osborne, that he was almost untouchable to the rest of government. He was a partner in power to Cameron. That dynamic will be different. So whether or not Philip Hammond as Chancellor or the Deputy Ministers in the Treasury are more accessible and more willing to listen, I think it's maybe too early to see. What we really do need is for almost a new normal to emerge. We've had a really, really dramatic spike, as Richard mentioned earlier, with the stamp duty changes. Now things will settle down. And that'll give us the evidence to really push ahead for some change.
And we hear that some of the construction companies have been lobbying for the 3% additional stamp duty surcharge to be removed. Do you think there's any chance of that?
There's certainly been a lot of lobbying, and the NLA has been lobbying on that as well on behalf of our members. It's the easiest change to come about. We've obviously got the changes to the way that income tax is treated, which is a massive change for the sector and a really dramatic change. that would be very difficult to row back on immediately. I think with the stamp duty change, it would be possible, although still politically difficult, but it would be easier perhaps to foresee a situation where there was a finite end date given to that. In the same way that we've seen governments of the past have temporary changes to stamp duty to encourage first-time buyers, this could be a temporary change to slow that part of the market down, and perhaps we could see a sunset clause put onto that piece of legislation.
Now, one of the factors that might, of course, make the government change their mind is if we see house prices start to fall. We've seen predictions of prices flattening out, particularly in London and the South East. And some people, of course, are saying that we might go into recession. What are your views on that, Richard Donnell?
Well, I think the London market's up significantly, sort of 60 to 70% above where it was 8 years ago. We're just running out of affordability. Affordability levels are very stretched. So I think, there's a real, house price inflation, say by the end of this year, we'll be running at 5 or 6% per annum, probably going to go lower. We're getting reports that prices are falling in central London. Small falls at the moment, and in the central London boroughs, 2 or 3% down. A lot of that's to do with the tax changes, euro, et cetera, Brexit, et cetera. So I think, London market's really going to underperform probably for the next 3 or 4 years. But if you look out of London, there's a lot of value for money. There's actually quite a lot of upside for house prices if mortgage rates stay low and the economy keeps growing. And it's all about the Brexit impact. What kind of Brexit are we going to have? How will that impact on investment? What will it mean for people's jobs and earnings? But I see outside London, there's upside.
And of course, there's a lot of talk of prices being quite buoyant in cities like Manchester, Nottingham, Bristol. Do we expect that to continue over the next few years?
I think so, as long as mortgage rates remain low. I think, there's a lot of momentum in some of the big cities. Liverpool as well is seeing some of the fastest growth at the moment. I think quite a lot of this is about investors as well, seeing good yields, chasing yield out there in the market. So I think, some of the big cities have probably got another 10, 20% of house price growth to come as long as the economy keeps growing. And I think that's what, the big focus of government's going to be for the next year is what is Brexit and effectively how that plays out from an economic perspective.
Now, Richard Bowser, one of the factors that has kept the market buoyant, particularly in London, has been international investors. But we see stats of falls of something like 10% in prime central London in property prices over the last couple of years. What's happening to international investors? Because, of course, we've got the pound lowering, haven't we? And that's, in effect, giving some of them a discount.
Yes, indeed. I mean, if you look at the exchange rate change since the Brexit vote, it's fallen probably against a basket of currencies by about 15%. It's obviously it gives them a 15% more buying power. And I think the other perhaps thing to consider is what are they buying? And Richard Donnell probably gives it a little bit more insight into that, because in the last 4 or 5, 6 years, maybe, a lot of international investors have been attracted to London, particularly Southeast Asian investors, and they've been purchasing along the Thames, along you've got the new Nine Elms development, Battersea Power Station, purchasing off plan, and there is clearly it would appear that there is oversupply, and international investors, that's starting to leak out into the media, the wider media, and I think perhaps that is one area of real concern. Going back to normal London, Greater London, and also the provinces, as Richard Donald's already said, that places like Manchester, perhaps Liverpool, some of the other regional cities are seeing interest now, strong interest from international investors, particularly when you look at the pricing between what you can get per square foot in Manchester or Sheffield or Birmingham in comparison with what you're paying along the Thames.
Now, stamp duty is also an issue here, isn't it? Because it's been deterring international investors from buying in prime central London. But we hear stories, Richard Donnell, of international investors buying perhaps 6 units in outer London rather than 1 unit in prime central London. Are you seeing much evidence of that kind of activity?
Well, I certainly think investors are getting out of London. I think with the stamp duty change hitting hard in London, we've got some of the mortgage lenders starting to change their underwriting criteria, which forces people to go into higher yielding markets as well. So absolutely, investors are effectively chasing yield. Why put up with 4% in London when you can almost double that and go to a solid market and cost you a lot less to get on the ladder? So we are seeing signs that in sort of real value for money cities with high yields, house prices are really picking up momentum there. And I think a lot of that is to do with investors not just buying with a mortgage, but those buying with cash.
Mm. And you mentioned their mortgages. Chris Norris, I wanted to ask you about Bank of England regulation, because we think that there's going to be a new stress test that's going to be applied to buy-to-let mortgages of something around 145% of rent at a stress test rate of 5.5%. So even if your mortgage rate is 2%, you'll still be assessed as if your mortgage rate were 5.5%. First of all, how likely is that to happen, do you think? And is it a step too far in terms of policymakers, you know, really putting their foot on the brake? Mm.
First of all, it's actually very likely. We've had rumblings of this for a few years now, and there's a real focus on prudential regulation. So really looking at the stability of the market. And I think maybe a year or so ago, when you know house prices were definitely on the up and the market was very hot, the bank identified the PRS and buy-to-let particularly as a real risk area, or an area that needs to look at more. I think they're sensible enough for most of the country. It's difficult because you do have to look at London almost in its own, as its own orbit, quite frankly. And it will be difficult for some landlords investing, some investors coming into London because of that kind of stress testing. The rest of the country, I think if you look at the products that are available, you know, most fit fairly comfortably within the kind of underwriting standards that we're talking about. It almost certainly is a case of bolting the stable door after the horse has bolted. But it's probably not going to have a really dramatic impact on most of the country. I think the point that was mentioned a moment ago, though, about chasing yields is an interesting one, because irrespective of what happens with the stress testing and the underwriting, you know, for the next foreseeable future, in the next few years, finance is going to be cheap, for want of a better word. What's going to really hit those yields is the fiscal policies of the government at the moment. So the changes to the way that most landlords, and we're talking about 80 or 90% of the market, who are individuals paying income tax, will be taxed. That's really going to hit their margins. It's going to hit their yields. And it's going to mean that if they can't rely on capital appreciation because of the uncertainty from Brexit and the uncertainty from lots of other policies, I can't see there being as much appetite for future investment. And certainly within our membership, we're seeing a plateauing. It's not necessarily a decline, but a plateauing in that appetite for future purchase.
Yes, 6 in 10 landlords say that the tax changes will decrease their profitability.
Absolutely.
Of course. And I think, according to NLA research, something like 4 out of 10 landlords are considering setting up limited companies, which, of course, is a way of sidestepping these issues on buy-to-let mortgages. You then have to go for corporate finance. Now, I say 4 in 10 worth either setting up or thinking of.
Yeah.
What evidence is there to suggest that people are actually going down that road?
Well, about 20% of our membership are already holding their property in a corporate structure, or at least some of their property. I think what's difficult for a lot of landlords is very few, or certainly very few of the traditional landlord in our membership, actually make an active investment decision to become landlords in the first place. You know, they are what we probably insultingly call an accidental landlord too often. They inherit a property, or they have a property because they've because their children have gone off to university and they're left with it afterwards. And then they realise there's an opportunity, they release some capital and they keep investing. What you often therefore have is a property portfolio made up partly of homes owned with your partner, partly owned individually, perhaps as you get more serious, partly owned in a company. And it's quite difficult to tie up all those loose ends. So we've got lots of landlords who are looking at what they can do, getting really very confused, and not entirely sure how they can best protect their investment from these changes. And it is really difficult. Most landlords are not, you know, are not necessarily entrepreneurs or interested or particularly learned in big business. They need some advice. And they're possibly not getting all the advice they need. So about 20% are already holding that property as a company. About 40%, as you say, are considering it. I think as these changes really start to bite, they'll weigh up the pros and cons. Some, unfortunately, will simply sell. Some will find a way to hold that property differently.
Hmm. Okay, well, you're listening to Inside Property with me, Richard Blanco. I'm discussing Brexit and its impact on landlords, property owners and investors with my three guests, Richard Bowser, editor of Property Investor News, Chris Norris, Head of Policy at the National Landlords Association, and Richard Donnell, Research Director at HomeTrack. Now, we've mentioned incorporation as one way of trying to adapt to the tax changes and the new landscape that Brexit is presenting us with. Richard Bowser, what other strategies are investors adopting to try and take account of tax changes?
I think this is where you differentiate between a property investor and purely a pure landlord, i.e. someone who's holding property purely for the rental income. Obviously, there are different types of landlords. There are those who are hands-on, and many members of the National Landlords Association will be hands-on landlords. And then you've got those who see it purely as a pension investment. They've just got maybe one or two properties. They may not even own properties with anywhere near where they live, and therefore they're using a letting agent. So many of my subscribers at Property Investor News are property investors, so they've got a much wider, broader interest, and their activities range from literally getting planning permission through and then maybe going on into development, or getting planning permission then selling on to a house builder. You've got people that do auction trading, so they buy and then they add value and sell, or they just literally sell at auction. They bought at a price off market. People are doing different things. And I think the Brexit and the tax changes are literally forcing people to be a little bit more nimble and be more creative. And I think you're certainly planning, and planning, what is named planning gain, is certainly something that I've seen a strong trend, particularly in London and the South East, in the last few years, from people that have been active buy-to-let landlords, started to do a little bit of buy to sell, started to do some development, and now they're looking at one of the strategies, without question, is the land and planning.
Okay, and presumably the additional 3% stamp duty is not too much of a deterrent, is it, to people planning to buy to sell?
Well, I think obviously, as has already been mentioned, the impact of 3% is clearly a factor far more to take into consideration in the high value areas in and around London, the Cambridge, the Oxford, etc. If you're paying over £500,000 for a property, and clearly, you know, the average price in London, I'm sure Richard Donald will correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's probably around £550,000. So you're going to be paying over £30,000 in stamp duty, SDLT. Whether you are buying to hold or buying to use the term flip to sell on, whether you add value or not. So that's a cost of entry which is quite significant. The lower value areas, the South Wales, the County Durham, where I invest personally, other lower value areas, the cost of entry with 3% extra stamp duty might be as little as £2,000 up front. It is something you have to take into account, clearly. It's a cost of business, but it's not necessarily going to deter that many people. The broader impact, the more important impact when you're doing buy to sell, of course, is there going to be a market for you to sell into, and how strong is that market? And as Richard Donald again has said, the activity levels in the lower value areas seems to be far more buoyant than perhaps we're seeing in the western end of Zone 1 in London at the moment.
Coming on to rents and how Brexit might affect those, I saw some stats the other day from Countrywide that said that rents in London had fallen by 0.5%, which is quite a surprise, because rents, of course, have been rising in London. One of the problems with rising rents is people then call for rent caps, and that can be quite a challenge for organisations like the National Landlords Association. Where do you see rents going, Richard Donnell?
I think rental growth in London has been particularly strong for the last 5 or 6 years, averaging probably 6 to 7% per annum nominal rate of growth. And I think part of that fall could have been just a pure seasonal factor. I mean, rental growth tends to be quite seasonal over the summer, etc. Outside London, rental growth has been more in line with earnings at sort of 1 to 2% per annum. But we have seen rents really start to pick up in the southeast of England, up to sort of 4 or 5%. I think a lot of the rental growth in London has been driven off higher occupancy levels. You just don't have spare bedrooms in inner London anymore. People are sort of almost, the rental market's got more to do with sort of pounds per bed per week than a rent for a two-bed property. But having said that about rent control, if you move out of London, there's about 4 or 5 regions, the Northwest, Yorkshire and Humberside and others, where actually rents today are no higher than they were 8 years ago. And I think that's where there's a real upside for rents. When we look at rental affordability, rent as a percentage of earnings, in many regions outside London, the South East, you know, rents are more affordable today than they've been for 7 or 8 years.
Now, I'm wondering how Brexit might affect this, because of course, we've had a lot of people coming into the UK from the EU, and that's meant that lots of people are looking for property, certainly in London and the South East. If the City of London loses its ability to passport into the EU, then does that mean that there'll be fewer workers coming to work in the City of London? How might those factors affect renting and rental values?
No, I think, you know, clearly the whatever happens on Brexit and whatever type of Brexit it is, and we don't even know what the rights of people who are already here or abroad, I mean, that's all got to be agreed. Clearly anything that has an impact on the strength of the financial services sector in London, anything that stops the flow of people coming in to work in London would have a demand side impact on the rental market. But what we've just been talking about, the stamp duty, the potential changes on affordability testing of buy-to-let, that's and taxes are all going to tighten up supply in the near term. So actually rental growth or rent should be supported, I think, in London. So I think we're not going to see the 6-7% rental growth we have seen, but rental growth in London could maybe more like 1-2% per annum on as supply tightens and demand cools off, not just on Brexit, but on affordability pressures. I mean, I'm not sure how much more tenants could afford to spend on rent in London. So I think the markets could certainly cool off in terms of growth.
Let's talk about the situation in Scotland and Wales. At Chris Norris, we've seen some significant changes there. We've got Rent Smart Wales in Wales, which is a new licensing and registration scheme, compulsory for all landlords and people letting properties in Wales. And in Scotland, the loss of what we call in England the Section 21 no-fault eviction. Are we likely to see any of those changes spreading to England, and what impact might they have?
I mean, taking the two separately, what's going on in Scotland is really quite scary from a private landlord point of view. You're right, there's the removal of the no-fault possession, which is Section 33 in Scotland. And it's effectively the end of certainty for a landlord. So, and we were already starting to see people making some very difficult investment choices, particularly if you look at high demand areas in north of the border. You look at Edinburgh, you look only this year at the festival season. You know, that is sustained almost entirely by the ability of landlords to specialise in students throughout one part of the year and then to meet the demands of the festival and the fringe throughout another part of the year. We're already seeing landlords planning for the next 2 years where they'll have no certainty about getting those student properties back because they won't simply be able to serve a notice that guarantees possession. So you've got parts of the wider economy and a very large part of that city's economy being affected there, you know, irrespective of what you think about landlords' abilities to invest. In Scotland, they've obviously had lots and lots of policy changes over the last few years that most landlords haven't really liked a great deal. The opportunity for Westminster and London to replicate that, I think it's probably less likely simply because of the politics involved. It's unlikely that our current government's going to be taking many lessons from the SNP. Looking towards Wales, I think that's probably a slightly more interesting one for Westminster, partly because it's not quite as wholesale a change. A lot of it's about stamping Cardiff's authority on what we have already. But RentSmart and the way that they're approaching what we would call accreditation, or what the Welsh Assembly Government and Cardiff Council together are calling calling RentSmart, but effectively licensing, is going to turn some heads in London, I think. As we watch what happens in what is effectively quite a small market, and to see how well that spreads out, I think if it's deemed to be a success, there'll certainly be a lot of policymakers on the centre-left towards the left thinking that could be a model. Of course, taking something that works for a few thousand landlords and households in Wales and scaling it up to 1.6 million landlords in England is really a challenge. And whether it's practical or not, I'm not entirely sure. But there'll be a lot of people making a very strong case for replicating what's going on in Wales.
Now, the Mayor of London is supportive of landlord licensing, and mm-hmm. something like 19 boroughs in London either have licensing schemes or are consulting on them. What's the likelihood that the Mayor of London could get devolved powers from central government to bring in a London-wide scheme?
Quite unlikely at the moment. I mean, you're right, they have a London-wide umbrella body for accreditation, which the NLA is part of. There's the London Rental Standard, which is a good badge to look for if you're a tenant looking for somewhere to live in London, and something very good to engage with if you're a landlord, because it sets you apart from what is a very competitive market. I think what the challenge that the Mayor of London has at the moment, not only being from a different party as the government in Westminster, is that not all of the boroughs within London actually agree that licensing is the appropriate way to deal with the issues that certainly exist throughout London. What can work very well in Newham, for instance, where you have a consensus, frankly, politically about what needs to be done and a great deal of funding to go about doing that, won't necessarily work in another neighbouring borough, let alone, let's say, in Conservative-controlled Westminster, where I can't imagine they'd really welcome Sadiq Khan telling them that all of a sudden they need to license landlords that they're quite happy working with. So I think he will certainly try to get those powers. I think the mayor can certainly play a significant role in trying to coordinate what local authorities in London want to do, what the boroughs want to do to combat the issues they have. And hopefully the town hall, city hall even, can become a hub for best practice. If he can do that, he can really have an impact, and hopefully spend a bit more time doing that and a little bit less time trying to get those powers that he doesn't necessarily need.
Now, I'm wondering how many investors get put off by this increase in regulation, alongside all of the uncertainties of Brexit. Richard Bowser, NLA research tells us that 35% of landlords think Brexit will impact negatively on their lettings business. Are you seeing much gloom and doom amongst investors?
Yeah, I think, as I said already earlier, without question, sort of July and into August. Clearly, August is a difficult period to gauge opinion because lots of people are away. We're into the show season, so we're going to be meeting face to face with a lot of landlords and property investors over the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks at various property events, and probably get a better real feel for how people are seeing. We've seen actually quite a positive trend with our subscriptions, which is for us obviously fairly important, and through August, which I was pleasantly surprised to see, but we're also seeing people fall out as well. So it's relatively early days, but I think people are more circumspect. I've been a landlord for many, many years myself, and there are ups and downs. It's a roller coaster ride, and for me and for many people I talk to that have been in the business and have got reasonable sized portfolios or very active property traders, developers, this is just another, something else that's got to be dealt with along the way, and people generally adapt.
And what advice would you give to people starting out now?
That's a difficult one, because clearly, if we go back to say 2002, when we launched Property Investor News, when you look at the landscape now and the barriers to entry, as Chris Norris has already said, we've had the mortgage market review, we've now got the likelihood of this PRA regulation in terms of limiting people's ability to borrow, perhaps to some extent, at one level you could say yes, it's sort of closing the stable door after the horse is bolted, etc. But on the other hand, they are perhaps, the government, the regulators are looking ahead to when we eventually return to a reversion to the mean in terms of interest rates. At the moment, we've got bank rate at less than, 0.25%. There's even talk that it might go down to 0.15. The long-term average for interest rates, and I don't want to cause alarm here for younger listeners, but the long-term rate is about 7 or 8%. So, if you throw in some lender's margin on top of that, I can remember, my wife actually fixed a mortgage at 11.5% in 1989. So people have got relatively short memories.
Perhaps we should ask Richard Donald to have the last word on this. What's going to happen to interest rates? So, Richard, can you gaze into your crystal ball for us and tell us?
Well, I think the consensus is that rates are going to probably stay low for some time to come yet. I think there's no problem with housing demand in this country. I think for anyone looking to invest, there's a lot of demand. I think as long as mortgage regulation is there, it'll stoke up rental demand. Yeah. And I think what the government's basically been doing is it's been trying to make residential just less of a no-brainer to do, to try and cool demand off a bit. Last year we had 1 in 5 property sales was to an investor. And I think the government's looking more broadly at what mix of buyers do we need? What how do we get prices more affordable? So I think the opportunities are there, but you've got to take the demand and be happy with the cash flow and plan your growth and expectations carefully.
Okay, well, some wise words for us to end on there. We've come to the end of the programme, and I'd like to thank my guests, Richard Bowser, editor of Property Investor News, Chris Norris, head of policy at the National Landlords Association, and Richard Donnell, research director at Hometrack. And thanks to you for listening.